After every election, there's the inevitable 2020 punditry focusing on what X did wrong and what Y did right. This can be annoying, but hey, done honestly, that's how we learn. Increasingly, this isn't just a political exercise. There's a similar exercise in the analytics community, looking at the performance of professional political analysts. In the wake of 2016, there was a lot of piling on 538 because they called the election wrong, 70-30 Clinton. This year, there's a lot of piling on 538 because they called it right, 90-10 Biden, but they seemingly missed how tight it was going to be. To me, the 2016 criticism was unfair, but the 2020 criticism is more reasonable. In 2016, the prevailing media narrative was that Clinton was a shoo-in. There were 1,000 reasons to think that Donald Trump couldn't win the election, and sans data, the overwhelming consensus was that he wouldn't. So a 70-30 forecast gave Trump a dramatically higher chance than the prevailing narrative. In hindsight, data was a corrective narrative, not a contributor to a false narrative. In 2020, the picture was a lot less clear. Trump was the incumbent, but he was widely reviled. He enjoyed a strong economy until COVID, but COVID was an unprecedented disaster, and Joe Biden essentially ran a run-away-and-hide non-campaign. In this environment, data shaped a large portion of the narrative about how we thought things were going to go, and the narrative it shaped was that Biden was well ahead in almost every state that was close but went Clinton in 2016, and was a little ahead in almost every state that was somewhat close but went Trump in 2016. What's more, the polls suggested a strong blue tide with gains at the House level and a strong likelihood of capturing the Senate. Mostly, that narrative was wrong. In the follow-up, I'm seeing a lot of defensive posturing by analysts pointing out that, hey, we called the overall vote share pretty closely, and the final vote tallies in a few of the key states are quite a bit closer to the predictions than the election night numbers, which skewed heavily based on voting patterns, would have led people to believe. But predicting the overall vote share in this election was trivial. I could have done it about as accurately with 10 minutes work and could probably produce a within 2% number for 2024. When people look to analytics, they want a little bit more than a solid prediction of which candidate will win California in the presidential election. The second point's totally fair. Model numbers actually did a pretty good job representing how the vote share distributed by voting type, and people overanalyzed the early returns. On the other hand, the final landing spot for a lot of battleground states was off significantly. That ought to be really worrisome to modelers using that data. That's a much higher error rate, especially at a meta level, aggregating multiple reliable sources than modelers have traditionally considered to exist in polling data. If the best polling we have regularly shows a 4-6% error rate in close states, then it's time for model builders to think about using a different data source. Polling that's 4-6% off, even when brought into a meta model, still might have uses. It could help campaigns figure out what states might be at risk and where to invest, and it might help shape a narrative about whether an election is close or not. But as input to a model for predicting a fairly close election, it's pretty damn useless. I think what we saw in 2020 is that there are real limitations in polling as an underlying data source for modelers like 538. Polling is a lot harder these days than it was 30 years ago when I was doing it. But that's not really an excuse. When you've built a business based on providing better insight to people via data journalism, you can't simply shrug off problems in your underlying data. If you build on sand, you can't pretend it's not your fault when the building shakes. Polling isn't cutting it, and they should be wise enough to admit it, not defend it. In 2016, the polling wasn't great. 4 years later, after a whole hell of a lot of effort, it was worse. It might be time to consider different, more big data approaches to election forecasting. It's important to remember, though, that 2020 is, and we could all say this in chorus, a hard-to-predict year. Changes in balloting and voting made one of the most challenging polling tasks that much harder, deciding who's a likely voter. I'll note that in 2018, 538 and the pollsters in general did a lot better. Bottom line, though, 538 gets a lot of eyeballs and presumably makes a lot of money on the basis of analytics and data adding value to the process. Like most analysts, I'm firmly committed to the idea that data and analytics do add value, but it's not foolproof. If your data isn't any good, you may be subtracting value, not adding it. And it's pretty clear where 538's contribution in 2020 fell, and it isn't on the positive side of the ledger. For me, at least, unless I see basic methodological changes or good reasons for thinking 2020's unique situation drove the poor predictions, I'm not going to be paying nearly as much attention to 538 next time around. If you're building a model and you get to choose what data to use, the one excuse you just can't give people is that the data sucks. Thanks for listening. I'm Gary Angel with the Measurement Minute.